Welcome to Fracking and Health, Ask an Expert. The Endocrine Disruption Exchange has been studying the health impacts from unconventional oil and gas development, also known as fracking, since 2004. In each episode, our Executive Director, Carol Kwiatkowski, asks an expert to answer a question on how fracking may affect your health. You can submit a question at tedx.org.
Welcome to Episode 3, Safe Setback Distances. We're talking today with Dr. Marcia Haley, a physician and clinical assistant professor at McGee Women's Hospital at the University of Pittsburgh Medical Center. One way to protect people from pollution associated with fracking is to require facilities to be set back from homes, playgrounds, and businesses. Currently, legal setback distances vary dramatically from one locality to another, usually being set by the state, sometimes the county. Dr. Haley, thank you for talking with us today.
Thank you for having me.
You conducted a study and concluded that even the most protective setbacks, up to 1,500 feet among the three states you evaluated, are not sufficient to protect people. Briefly, can you tell me what some of the health threats from insufficient setbacks are?
So the first thing is that it's important to understand the science. So over 80% of the scientific literature shows public health risks and or adverse outcomes from proximity to gas well sites. And as we outlined in our paper, some of these risks include air pollution and potential thermal injury from explosions or fires.
If the current safe setbacks are not safe, how can we go about determining a safe setback? Do we currently have enough data, and what are some of the complexities we need to understand?
So, unfortunately, there are still people out there claiming that there are no significant risks from being close to natural gas sites. However, the preponderance of scientific evidence tells us otherwise. As I mentioned earlier, over 80% of the literature shows that there are public health risks. Once we accept that the public health risks exist, we need to figure out ways to minimize those risks. One way to do that, as we just discussed, is by establishing setback distances. And to plan a setback distance, some important factors to consider are topography, geology, site construction, plan mitigation measures, and presence of vulnerable populations. And as we discussed in our paper, unfortunately, distance alone is not an absolute measure of protection. So it can be somewhat of a complex topic to try to set a setback distance.
So who would be involved in determining the safe distances? Obviously, you would want to include scientists, but what other types of people would you recommend? And is there a good model available for putting the variables together?
There isn't a really good model at this point, but we're trying to change that, and it's improving incrementally. So ideally, politicians would seek input from scientists and experts in the area before making the laws. Unfortunately, when it comes to fracking, the expansion of the practice happens so quickly that science and legislation struggled to keep up. And in fact, there was a study at my facility, the University of Pittsburgh School of Public Health, that showed that when they developed the Pennsylvania Governor's Marcella Shale Advisory Committee, there were no individuals with health expertise on the panel. And this was also the case with the Secretary of Energy Advisory Board Natural Gas Subcommittee. So, you know, when you have a board that's determining laws to protect people from health effects and there's no individuals with health expertise on these panels, that's a big problem. And I think in the past several years, that's improving, but it's improving incrementally, and we'd like to see it move a little bit quicker.
Yes. And do you think if a safe distance was determined, could it be applied across several states or all the states? Would you recommend that, or is it very locality specific?
Well, each shale formation is different. Some have higher gas to oil ratios, some are deeper, etc. A shorter setback might be acceptable if the company were implementing certain mitigation measures like 24-hour real-time air monitoring. Each site should be looked at individually for geology and nearby population as well. So unfortunately, one size doesn't fit all when it comes to the setback distance.
Mm-hmm. But a good model would help.
Yes.
And And what barriers do you foresee in getting safer setbacks made into law? And if you could speak a little bit to how you think they could be overcome as a way of helping nonprofits and grassroots groups to try to get some strategies in place to overcome those hurdles.
So one of the big barriers is that there's really little U.S. federal regulation of fracking. The bulk of the regulatory responsibility lies with the states, and these regulations vary widely, like we discussed in our paper. For example, in Texas, the setback can be as close to 200 feet to your house. Then you have the other extreme in New York State, where fracking is banned altogether. And this can be confusing for lawmakers when they're trying to establish setbacks, because you often have widely varying opinions of what they should be doing. And when I talk to politicians, one thing that they struggle with is trying to fairly represent all of their constituents. So this can include the parent who is concerned about health effects from a nearby proposed well, and it also includes the leaseholder who's anxious to start receiving royalty checks, and it's a difficult balancing act for the politician as well. As far as what grassroots and advocacy groups can do to facilitate change, obviously, as we found out the hard way in our area of Pennsylvania, it's important to be involved and understand and be knowledgeable about what's going on in your community. You can't sit back and wait for something to happen. You have to be aware of what's going on. And in my experience, the success of a grassroots group depends on the group's willingness to stick to the facts, willingness to have a dialogue, and not rely completely on emotion. Unfortunately, some of the more radical environmentalists I've come into contact with are not taken as seriously because they're speaking from emotion and not facts, and won't have a dialogue about anything but banning fracking nationwide. The fact is that fracking is here, it's going on in some states, and right now we have to work within that framework to make it a safer process. And another thing that's important to remember is that people want to know how an issue is affecting them personally. When they've done research on areas such as climate change, it shows that abstract ideas and doomsday predictions don't do a lot to motivate people to change. But if you can connect with a person as to how having a fracking well next door to their house might affect them and their family, you'll be more successful in recruiting them to your cause. And of course, the more people involved in the cause, the greater the chance of affecting a change.
That's a lot of really good information, and I appreciate your insight and your expertise. It sounds like getting the right people together in a room, willing to work together, understanding the scientific variables and the local geography are really important. Thank you very much for talking with us today.
You're welcome.
Thank you for listening. TEDx is a nonprofit research institute funded by grants from private foundations and by donations from individuals who care about our health and the environment. Visit our website at tedx.org for more information on what we do, to submit a question for an expert, or to make a donation.